in the other sectors. But I think I've been too long in that sector. I understand exactly what's happening. But those are the realities which we believe that the skills development was tailor-made to ensure that the skills shortages are addressed. I'm not hearing that in this sector, this was the main problem. And according to our statistics, this problem has been to this far. We have developed this skill, investigators, this, police. We don't have so many police who are ordinary police from Senate 6. This is the skills we have given. We don't hear that, which we believe is the main issue. And go to your monies, I should think your expenditures on administration, we don't know what is it all about. Because maybe there's a report which will tell us vividly what you have spent here and there. Your administration, it's 48.2, quite high compared to the job get done, I should think. Because there's no statistics that this is what we receive against this is what we have done. And your liabilities are just not acceptable. I don't understand why you've got 26 million liabilities. Maybe if you can explain, because you are saying finance current leases portion 422, which is 2%. But your provisions, we don't know what provisions are those. Whether it's provisions for lease, provisions for what, we don't know. Unless somewhere, somehow, we'll find a financial statement where we can go. We'll accept this as the summary, but you can see the financial statement and see what were you providing for on that 10%, because it's quite high. We don't know what are your payables. What are you still gonna pay? What is it? Why were you not paying that? You've got 88% of what? Is that 88% of your total income, or is that 88% of? We don't know what is it. If that can be clarified. But I think my main concern is we don't hear what is the impact of skills development in the sectors you are dealing with. Thank you.
The gentleman who has just joined you is Mr. Peter. Not George. Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, Peter is here. So I'm sorry, I've marked the wrong person. Welcome. Olive.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just two comments. The first one is you have made a very confusing statement in your presentation. Very confusing. At one point, your presentation says that you are within the 10% allowance for administration. A couple of pages later, you say you're spending 32% of your income or on your total revenue on administration. There's about a 22% difference. And I can tell you what, if I walk out here and hand your report to a journalist, tomorrow morning in the business day, you're going to look funny. So that report is very badly presented like that. You should not do that, and you should explain what that other, what the discrepancy is, because this committee is faced now with a potential 32% spend of revenue on administration, which is way over what it should be, and I'm sure that needs some explanation. And the other thing is you've got a lot of zeros or very low figures of training that is actually happening. Now, I don't want to debate why that is there now, because we've got limited time. What we need to know is, what are you doing to fix that? Can we have confidence in this CETA's management that they're not going to be zeros there in a year's time? You're not going to come back to this committee and report. You're going to report presumably to higher education. But we'll pass these reports on, and they'll ask you the same question next year. What have you done to fix the zeros and the very low? There's 161 people trained at one point or entered the training program out of 500. Practically, what are you doing to close that gap? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Nisi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to highlight that we are really concerned. What are we really concerned about or interested is the value for money and the reality on the ground. My question is based on the lacking of that is the scarce skills like investigators. What is it that is lacking since there are continuous problems within the police sector? Are the trainers well trained? I think on that one, the review must be done. My next question, on which provinces do you have offices? If you have offices, then what are your plans on rolling out your program to all the provinces so that you can be visible enough in the ground? That's where we are interested in helping our people in the ground. My other question is that why are you having so many dropouts in your program? Why are you having those drop out in your program? Thank you,
Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Minister. Honorable Nyakemba.
Thank you very much. I think partly Honorable Olive covered my question. I was worried about this admin expenditure. It was in the presentation that exceeds the 10% limit. I think you need to unpack that. I'm not expecting an answer that says it's administration error. I'm expecting an answer that says you exceeded the 10% limit because of the reasons that you might list. The second point is that the I think one need to appreciate the fact that in your presentation you didn't cook figures in certain areas on the basis of the targets. Where you achieved zero, you clearly indicated that you achieved zero, and there are many zeros. I think even other cities who are going to present after you, if they cooked figures, now they must rectify that and put zero where they got zero. I think we need to appreciate that, that honesty. And I think to get zero, you then said yourself you need to pull up yourself. I think the point that has been raised by Honorable Ollis, I think you need to share with us as to how do you fix the areas where you haven't done good? The third point, Madam Chair, is I think this also goes to other sectors that are going to present after you. It's good that you get an unqualified audit opinion. And then sitters will list and say, since our existence. But if you make comparison of the unqualified audit opinions versus the actual work that has been done, these do not speak to each other. So the point I'm raising here is that given the unqualified audit opinions that you get last financial year and the previous financial year, and you intend to get the same even in this current financial year, how do you equate that with the output of the responsibilities that responsibilities of your existence as a sitter. The last point, Chef, and I think this goes to other sitters too. How do you benchmark the remuneration of your executive management as a sitter? Because I don't want to say what other sitters said, those who came before you, but I just want to hear from you. How do you determine the remuneration of your executive management? I think that is important for me. That's what I said.
Okay, no, thank you, members. To add on this question, the 10%, exceeding 10%, I want to know where to get the funds for that you used over the 10%. The trainees. Who are the trainers? You know, I have not forgotten. I also remember who was here from the department. Last time when you came here, there were a number of questions that I've asked, that I needed the department to come and answer them before we receive your annual report or in this process, where all security-related problems. Now, I want to know who are the trainers. I know that you identify companies who qualify according to the book who can train. Who are those? For instance, if it's a company, Dumisane Pita company, who is the owner of that company? Is it Dumisane? You know, when you identify these companies, definitely you look at the profile of the person. You look at the profile, where does this person, is this person fit to do this thing, the experience, where has he trained, is it a product? So things like that. Who are the owners of these companies that you have awarded or you have given this training to? Who are they? Now, for a trainee to be a quality product, as you are saying, produced by these companies, what is that you identify as quality? What requirements do you need for these trainees to be successfully recruited to be part of the training? What is that you need? Is it academic qualifications? Is it your background, where you worked before, or a combination of all those? And in terms of your focus in this training, because if you are training different people who are going to different fields, people who go for to justice fields, people who go to the police, people who are going to be doing, who are going to be investigators, number of them. But then in that process of the training, what is that is done to ensure that do you have a training that is designed for investigators only? A training that is designed for the foot soldiers? The training, how do you deploy at the end of the training? How do you say that this is a product a quality product that we need in this field. Somebody, one of the members, have said there's a shortage of investigators, number of areas. So I know you have achieved, I know even the sitters that are coming, we have had to all the sitters. They've all overachieved in terms of the targets. I have no doubt there will be no sitter that has not achieved. But what you want is quality. What is what is that you call quality? The characteristic features or characteristics of a person who's qualified, who's quality. Is it a person who can snipe? Is it a person who can... All those things we want to hear from you. Thank you.
For the questions. I think colleagues will also assist me to deal with this other question. Regarding the first question, I think one must indicate that the implementation of interventions in the sector is largely guided by the sector skills plan. And on an annual basis, the CETA will then update and come up with what you call the skills and critical list. If you look at the justice, crime, and security cluster, there has been a number of areas raised in terms of that particular sector being able to have relevant programs, to combat crime. If you look at what we have implemented as a state around the issue of crime prevention, we have had the forensic science learnership, basically whose attempt was to boost the forensic capabilities, of our police force. We have had crime resolving leadership, also based on making sure that we empower officials within the policing fraternity to deal with issues of resolving crime. Yes, there might be other programs as well which are generic in a form of public administration, human resources. Also important to assist those policing departments to have the sufficient, capacity in terms of rendering other non-core activities. And when you also look at the criminal justice cluster as well, one of the biggest issues was about, training people on the effective functioning of the courts. And the CETA had to respond to that particular need, which because it was identified in the critical skills and critical skills. We introduced a learnership called court management learnership. It was for the first time that the country had that learnership where, people are being trained as court managers to manage the whole aspect of courts, dealing with delays, case management. So that learnership was also an attempt to make sure that there's an efficiency in dealing with court management issues. Also, backlogs and all that. But key as well, in terms of transformation, government is saying that people needed to access justice in their own languages. The CETA in this regard implemented the first legal interpreting learnership, where, interpreters were trained. We actually took 100 in this financial year under review, 100 of interpreters, employed interpreters, to undergo a full learnership, to be trained on interpreting court procedures, because that was part of government to basically make court services accessible to the public at large. Then also within that particular framework as well, we dealt with issues of reviewing the correctional science learnership, because we were all agreeing that that particular department need to be assisted in terms of having people qualified in dealing with rehabilitation programs. So here I'm talking about the entry people who come in, get trained in what you call a correctional science learnership to deal with issues of rehabilitation in prisons, or what we call correctional centers. Then as a city as well, I think we have been very vigilant in terms of ensuring that employers in the sector, particularly your public sector-based departments, are able to give us a reliable workplace skills plan, that are able to report on the annual training report, which is basically those two particular documents that would interrogate making sure that indeed training has taken place as they have reported. Then I think let me go to the issue of what then happens in the workplace. I think we have reported that, for instance, in the indicator 2.0, the one that deals with employed learners, the target there on was we had a target of 3.2 of employed learners getting into learning programs. These are employed people. They are already placed. They are in the workplace. They are employed. Part of that as well, I think, is to make sure that these particular programs, they also link in terms of the individual training plans of staff members in those departments. We also be responding to the skill audits, because we as a city, we also assist departments deal with their own respective skills audits. And what come out of the skills audits, it links to the kind of programs that we run, because those particular programs cannot be imposed on the department. They've got to be identified in terms of the critical list. They've got to be informed in terms of the update of the annual skill audit. They've got a future as well in the WSP. So I think there's a very reliable process of making sure that this particular skills interventions become relevant in terms of the specific needs of the government departments that we are serving, but also our levy income employers. CFO, take the finance one on 10%.
Thank you, Chair. What we are looking at there is that we had a total expenditure of 150 million. Now, what we are saying is that out of that total expenditure, not as a percentage of revenue, but as a percentage, because we are looking at what were the drivers of that total expenditure of 150 million.
And out of that, 48 million, which is 32%, was spent on administration. Then the remainder of 68% was spent on projects and mandatory grants. Just to assure you that we were within the 10%, actually we're around 8.2% of the total revenue. If perhaps I have to refer you to our annual report, is that out of our total revenue of 185 million, administration reserve, which is the revenue that only deals with administration, it was standing at 58 million. Out of that 58 million, we spent the 48 million that is there. So we were within the 10% administration. That 32% is only as a percentage of the total expenditure that was expended for the CETA.
Chairperson, you know, it's simple math. If you go back to the revenue on page 28, whether it's 58 million or 48 million, you know, whether it's 48 million of 150 or 58 million of 185, it's still nearly 30%. It's whether it's 30% or 32%, it's still nowhere near 10%. How do you get to 10%? Can you show me the figure? Because on your page 28, it's either 58 million out of 185 or it's 48 million out of 150. It's still 30-something percent. It's nowhere near 10%. So 10% of what? Where do you get the 9 point whatever or the 8 point whatever? It's a third.
Thank you, Chair.
Did you understand the question?
Yes. If I have to refer you, I'm not sure if there is a copy of our annual report in front of you. Our annual report, it breaks down our sources of revenue. Yes. If you look at page 50, it breaks down our sources of revenue to say that whatever we receive, how much goes to the mandatory grant and how much goes to the discretionary grant and how much goes to the administration reserve. And I can assure you that the auditors, when they come to audit, that's one of the first things that they check as to whether have we exceeded. Now, out of those three different categories of our funding, the administration reserve was, or the administration income that was available to pay the administration expenditure was 58 million. And out of that 58 million, we have only spent 48 million. Now I'm talking as part of the revenue. What you will recall is that not all our subsectors pay the 10% grant. Your government departments contribute directly to the administration reserve. And your private employers, that is your legal sector and your private security, they contribute on all three categories. That is your discretionary, your mandatory, and your administration reserve. So it wouldn't be a simple matter of saying, okay, you take the 58 million as a percentage of the total revenue, then what do you get? Because there are others. Like your seven government departments are not contributing towards your administration, towards your discretionary reserve, and are not contributing towards your mandatory reserve. But as you receive the money, you need to be able to split to say that how much of this money goes into the administration reserve. And once you've pulled through all your administration reserve, how much in terms of expenditure have you expended on administration reserve? Because our limit for the financial year that is under review was 58 million, but we were able to spend 48 million, so we're still within the budgeted revenue.
Continue.
Chair, on other remaining questions, I think the one that relates to
the our strategy towards dealing with these zeros. I think when the annual report, I think, was presented and the overall, you know, scorecard, board then engaged executive management to basically put some strategies to deal with those particular areas. We are already beginning to address some of those issues as we speak to you. Yes, there's a plan in place to address those areas, areas around like support for the small medium enterprises, issues that relate to support for the PEs in the sector, areas that relate to, you know, support for the non-levy paying entity. So yes, there are tangible actions taken by management to address those as per the instruction of the accounting authority, which is our board in this case. Then let me look at the aspect that we have asked the one of who are the providers in this industry. We must make a distinction between, you know, public providers and private providers. In our case, like the public providers will be institutions or colleges that operate within our, you know, government departments, like in this case, the Department of Correctional Services. They will have their correctional colleges across the country. That as a CETA, we are accrediting them. Then you will have the police as well. You have the Department of Justice having what you call the Justice College, which is the public sector-based training provider. Then in the private sector fraternity, we need to make a distinction. We have private security levy payers. Those are major employers in the sector. They are security companies. And we have security training providers. Those are providers accredited by the CETA, operating within the primary focus of safety and security. The reality we have in the private security industry is that the majority of security service providers are also training providers. A large portion of them. You have them as registered employers who are providing security services to clients. But at the same time, they've got their own training institutions in-house. But then those are, they'll go through the normal processes of getting accreditation of a CETA, will monitor, would evaluate them. They'll also differ in terms of size and scope as well. So do you want to add on?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, maybe one thing that you would also like to highlight, because there were questions regarding ownership, equity, and experience. I think those are some of the things that we actually look at each time that we have got to appoint a training provider. That is a key. But maybe also to reemphasize what you have indicated in terms of the zeros, the strategies there. One could say, for instance, with the BEE, that we have assisted a big number of BEs within the legal, meaning your legal firms, the small emerging firms that have been capacitated in terms of business administration and all related aspects. And also maybe to indicate that within the corrections when it comes to the NGOs and CBOs, we do have a database at the moment where we have identified those and NPOs and NGOs that would actually be assisted. With regard to the cooperatives, maybe to allay the fears of the, those members that might have asked as to whether the same zeros would not be depicted during this current financial year, is that we have already awarded, disbursed grants to specific employers. For instance, your defense, where they do have a number of corps that are currently being formed. So this just indicates that, yes, we do have plans in place to ensure that the zeros won't be there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question that was raised on the what type of assistance is given to learners.
Just before that. Just tell me who then are you? are you preparing the students for security industries? Would go because at, in your presentations you have provided staff with some students. Now, what I wanted to know, I'm aware of these trainings. I mean, really, you can't go through that training of what is that will be needed. But if you are training for staff, and when you are training for security companies, what kind of training do you when you give the trainees to staff, you take from the same pool those people who have been prepared for security industries? What type of training that is done by your providers that will assist us to have quality product? Now, you are also assisting Justice Ministry. You've been specific in terms of interpreters. When you are required to give learners to Justice Department, is your training the same? What I want to know is the training, do you have one basic training? And then when staff is asking for trainers, you take the same people you give to staff, you take the same people you give to security industries. Unless I was not very clear, because I said, do you have, when you are identifying the trainees, what kind of qualifications are you looking for? Are you grouping them in different trainings so that when you are required to offer some students to staff, you have a training, you have laid grounds for the training that will be done by staff. You have prepared your students for staff activities. You have prepared your students for justice, your defense force, because the times. So your providers, what is that? How is this training? Are you, when the people ask for funds, the requirements, are these requirements the same? Is the person saying to you, the service provider, does he say, I am going to train the security people, I need, this is the requirements, the funds that I'm looking for are to train for security. How do you differentiate between all these service providers? Who does what for what?
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm going to respond and try and just put a picture. In terms of this SACITA, we have got the seven chambers that are forming, the SACITA. Now, in terms of the SAPS training, if, for instance, the SACITA is going to assist the SAPS in terms of training, the training, is specifically geared in terms of the SAPS. In other words, the recruitment and the selection of the trainees that are going to go into training, into basic training specifically for the police. Because police, I mean, learners, are not trained in any other institution. They are trained in the 10 basic training institutions, which are within the South African Police Service. So those learners, before they actually go into that training, which is going to be quality assured by the, by the SOSITA, at some stage, before they go there, the SAS will implement its selection and recruitment criteria in terms of, using the SAS batteries, like the issue of the fitness, of those people, like using the obstacle, requirements, using, the requirements in terms of matric certificates or equivalents. All those batteries, they come from the South African Police Service. And then those learners that have been selected are going to be put within the basic training institutions. The training that is going to, to take place there is tailor-made, and they are trained in, specifically, the National Certificate Policing, which is actually the learning program that is designed within the South African Police Service, quality assured by the SOSITA, in order to train them. But then if you go to the other, to the other institutions, you will find again an identification in terms of the training that has got to be implemented. For instance, if I can make an example again, within the South African Police Service, the investigators, that you are talking about, how are the investigators, the investigators, the training is not just bunched into one thing, but within the South African Police Service, an identification is made in terms of the requirements, like the forensic investigators course, to train those people, in that area. And then, that qualification was developed, was designed with, together with the SOSITA in order to meet the demands that are, of the South African Police Service. So those investigators are not going to be trained in just any other, other kind of training, but there's a specific forensic learnership qualification that was designed in order to, to address that particular need. And the recruitment and the selection of those learners, again, is something that was done by the South African Police Service using certain criteria. So you don't just get one provider providing one size that fits all. The training is designed in such a way that it addresses the requirements according to the different subsectors that are within the, the SOSITA. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Mbekela, your training is, your input is assisting. Now, just one more question. Now, out of these institutions that you are training for, which institution has more demand? Is it SAPS? Is it the SANDF? Is it your general security industries? Where has the bulk of your funds gone to in terms of services? Is it your securities, is it SAPS, is it our intelligence services? Where is it?
Chair, the arrangement that we have in the SOSITA is that we have what we call a proportional allocation of funds. The biggest cake of our budget goes to the private security industry, which accumulates 29% of the funding in safety and security sector. Then the second biggest is the policing, chamber, largely the South African police, which accounts for 18%. The second one is then legal. Then you have got the policing, which accounts for the 18%. Then you have got the corrections and justice that accounts for the 18% of the entire budget and programs. Then the small scale of the training takes place within the intelligence sector, which is basically they account for not less than 5% of our budget.
before I take my life, just to finish up this question, who decides on this allocation as to who should get the big and the second and the third? Is it the CETA? Is it who decides?
Was a board decision.
You want to say something? Okay.
Yes, just before you proceed, Chairperson, I wanted to indicate that when it comes to the police, and because of the nature and the bulk, I mean, of the people that had to be trained, with, I mean, within the police, you find that some of the, I mean, the money, I mean, that went into the training of the people within the institutions of the South African Police Service was actually coming from the, I mean, from the South African Police Service. So we don't take the bulk, I mean, from the SACETA. We use our portion as the, I mean, as the employer, as the organization, in order to, I mean, to do that training. But then, because of the services that we need to receive, I mean, also from the SACETA, in order to quality assure, I mean, the training that has to take, I mean, to take place there, then, I mean, we also receive, I mean some money from the SACETA.
Maalina, please.
I should think a follow-up to one of the chairperson's question is that I understand that on the private security, if I understand this here properly, that the private security, it's one of the BEE companies which have their own training and they also train and employ. Is that what is happening?
Yeah, saying that the private security constitute the largest portion of levy income payers. So a lot of levy income, it's made of entities, private employers within the private security. Hence, they get the biggest share in terms of allocation for skills development.
I think when the answer we were giving, she asked who is the owners of this company who are training. You then said some of the private security companies, they are owned by the same people and they're training it for the same company. That's what I'm clarifying. That are you saying the very same owners of those companies are also having their own training programs? Because the problem, if that is the case, then it means we are missing a ball, seriously. I have seen in certain cities where people were just called for a meeting and then their names were written. And at the end, it was said those people were trained. And what follow-ups do you have? How you monitor and ensure that that money is used to develop those people? The problem here we have is that if you develop for yourself, what is it that you check? What is the quality training you check as a sitter from the owner of the company is going to train? Even the discretionary money given to companies, what companies are doing with them? If you just give the money, how you check the quality, how you monitor that, for sure those people are trained. We can go to the street now and see any private security company and ask one person, how were you trained, where were you trained, what kind of type of qualification you have. Instead, those people are sent to private training. You cannot go and be employed there unless you've got a certain certificate, whether D or C, I don't know, it's D or those categories. What quality assurance do you put in place to ensure that those owners of those companies are not just taking money into their pocket, but they are really developing? Thank you.
Thank you. We have internal mechanisms to deal with that. Firstly, when you sign a contract with a training provider, there are certain milestones that this provider must meet, because we don't pay the money upfront. If it starts with the recruitment of provider, well, then you'll qualify for a certain amount of money. If the training has been delivered, if our officials have visited in terms of monitoring to say there are specific requirements that have been met, you will then like attain, you know, the follow-up in terms of the money that is due to that specific provider. So there are, I think, very strong checks and balances to make sure that by the time training comes to an end, you actually achieve, you know, value for money in terms of what you have paid for. We've also, taken providers into task as well to say part of the milestone as well is to also assist those learners with placement. So, yes, I think there are sort of sufficient, you know, checks and balances to ensure that we do derive value for money in those issues, but also that those people who will emerge declared competent will actually get, you know, accredited certificate as well, because it's not just you sending learners to a provider that does not have credentials and capacity.
I think, Chem, the other thing that the CETA has, because there's an ET2A division within the CETA, there's a learnership division within the CETA. Monitoring mechanisms are built in within those divisions in order to ensure that during the training, when the training is taking place, those providers are visited constantly in order to monitor whether, what is supposed to be taking place, is it really what is taking place? I think, monitoring is one of the, a quality assurance mechanisms in order to ensure that training that is being implemented is training that is according to the standard, that is required. So there are mechanisms to actually ensure that.
Is there follow-up, Honorable Nyekemba?
Thank you very much. It's a follow-up to the proportional setup, where private security is getting a bigger priority in terms of money. Now, the clarity that I'm seeking, Chairperson, is because I'm exposed to the private sector, not public sector. My understanding in the private sector is that there's 1% of the wage bill that is paid through SAS. And out of that, 20% is being allocated to the National Skills Fund. Then 80% goes to the CETA. Now, how do you get, in fact, does SAPS, Correctional Services, and others in the public sector, in particular, do they pay the levy the same as the private sector? Linked to this, Chair, is the question that was raised by Honorable Chairperson of the Caucus, Alina, next to me.
Caucus of the ANC.
Caucus of the African National Congress. This strategy is required here, Chair. And obviously, if we don't get not necessarily a convincing, but a response that is understandable, we'll keep on asking this question. In training, I will also make a reference to the private sector, because I understand in SAPS you've got a college, in correctional centers you've got a college. Yeah, there are colleges that are put in place for skilling for those particular departments within the public service. Then in the private sector is not the same setup. It's different. But in your presentation, in particular on the private security, you made mention of colleges and linked that with other private sector companies doing the training. I think the point from me, Chair, is that can you put some meat on this for us to really understand? When you say I've got a security company, I'm doing training. Because my understanding is that there are these grants. There are these grants that are dispersed as a result of the reports that are based on the workplace skills plan. Isn't it that there are workplace skills plans that are submitted to the CETA? And then there are reports that are going to follow these workplace skills plans. Reports that tells you how much training has taken place as a result of the workplace skills plan that has been submitted. So further explanation in the statement that you made when you were presenting. I think it's important because it will wish away this confusion that we have. Because it's like now, I'm an employer. I'm paying the levy, and at the same time, I'm a service provider. You get my point? Can you clear that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. In relation to the private securities, the companies, what they have is we would be having bigger companies, like you will call them your ADT, your CHAP, and your Coin Security. Those ones, though they are employers, they all of them also have their training wing. But in terms of the allocation that we're talking about, all the security companies that we have that are levy paying, that would qualify in terms of the Act to in terms of the submission of the WSPs, they will still get their 50% of the mandatory grant back, which the public service doesn't get because they don't actually contribute to that. The allocation that we're talking about of proportional allocation is that proportional allocation that is based on the other 20% of the discretionary grant, on top of that mandatory grant that they have that we disperse back to them in relation to their WSPs. They will still get that allocation again for them also to benefit in terms of skills development, wherein they will apply like any other company or SAPS and all that for the programs within the chambers that we have identified with them, wherein they will say that we need to train 20, let's say, electronic security officials that we have within our system, then the grant again will be allocated to them to pay for the training of those employees, and again added to them again. They would also benefit because instead of the other public entities, they would even, their learners, they would get even the stipend for them to go and attend the training. They are assisted furthermore, not only to pay for the training itself, but also to transport their learners to and fro. That's why now there is much more in terms of the allocation. Their portion is bigger because of the added costs that will go with their training as well.
Honorable Lalina, on this question, is that clarity?
Yes.
It's a follow-up question to what the chairperson has asked, which I'm not getting it clear. I should think the Honourable here was trying to explain, but it's not quite clear. You are saying for police, defence, intelligence, there's a training, there's an institution, which is government institution, which is doing training. So what is your role? Because they will be trained, there's a clear skills development, as I think Comrade Ngembe also said, there's a clear skills development program by the institution. What is the role of the CETA to talk about defense, and why should you interview on their behalf? Why should you check those on their behalf? Because you are not building skills. The legislation talk about skills development. You are not going to develop skills for them. Why should you interview, divert from what the legislation is saying? Not developing them, but interview them so that the government itself again can go and develop them. I don't understand. Thank you.
I think the mandate of CETAS is quite clear. As a CETA in safety and security, we have got to implement learning programs, learnership, skills program, and so on. So that we do, obviously we can't do that as a CETA alone. We do through public providers that exist also within security government departments, including the private sector. Then secondly, the Act says that we have got to also provide quality assurance, dealing with standards, dealing with accreditation. Those programs have got to be accredited by us because those qualifications are within our primary focus. So mandate is bestowed by legislation, and it is quite clear in terms of what is expected of us as the CETAs to assist our stakeholders, you know, develop the learning programs, make sure that we have got proper quality assurance system, also do the monitoring and evaluation of that particular training as well. Then I think there was an issue of government. You know, it's true that government is excluded from the levy. The arrangement that we have is that government departments do contribute a certain amount to fund our administration. We have service level agreement that we signed with them to basically enforce that particular payment. So the CFOs of each department will ensure that there's a quarterly transfer from the government department to the CETA to assist us deal with administration issues. I think there was a question on salaries. The CETA at some stages did appoint a service provider to basically assist us benchmark, you know, salaries across the CETA. So if you look at the salaries, they're also comparable to what other CETAs are paying, particularly the public sector-based CETAs.
Just as a follow-up on that particular one, I think the question was more to say, how do we determine the salaries of the executive? And my attempt to put it is the question that was from the Honourable Mayor is that in our remuneration committee, Chair, and the benchmarking that we've done, we had looked at this position, your CEO, your CFO, and our senior managers, vis-a-vis currently what other CETAs are paying, vis-a-vis also what the private sector is paying and government is paying. And on those bases, Chair, then that's how these determinations are done. But for other staff members through our HR, I think they could be able to explain. But there is a remuneration committee, Chairperson, that compromises of organized labor and the employer representative that would look at the remuneration as some form of consideration. But, Chair, I'm tempted to go back also just to touch on this particular matter to say, although my colleagues are not raising it sharply, it is a discomfort from us also as a board that these allocations of budget talks to more to the allocation that goes to the private sector. You look at the our inputs that we are making on the new sector landscape. Some of us within the board, we are moving for a position to say perhaps it isn't better that the two private sector chambers that we have in our midst, the private security and legal, to go it alone with other sectors, looking at the bigger government intention when it comes to issues of safety and security. Because it's unacceptable, Chair, that you look at defense. The defense will only, let's talk in this financial year, the allocation is 9%. The defense each year recruits 10,000 young unemployed school leavers. When they are absorbed in the system, Chair, the department itself, due to budget constraints, is unable to train them. It relies on the funds that are coming from the CETA. But if we have a chunk of 18%, that equals to 26 million, going to private securities, who will come and parade as providers at the end of the day, it's an issue that we are battling with as a board. And I will thought my colleagues would bring that sharply. But then on the issue of the remuneration, Chair, I think we have touched on that. And as I'm saying, if you look at our sector landscape document, it also touches on the remuneration of the executive chair as to probably what is it that as boards we are proposing it needs to reflect like Chair. Thanks.
I think I must welcome this input, the last one, because I was very worried, in fact I'm still worried. You know, the private security companies, I'm not sure that the mechanisms that you have put in place are working properly, because I don't think you can trace where these people are. You can trace each and every person who has been trained by these security companies. Those who train for SAPS know immediately they go to SAPS, right? Those who are trained by the security companies, you don't know them. And research has shown us that security companies are most of them are owned by labor brokers. And people who are employed by those security companies, their jobs are not, it's not permanent jobs. There's no decent or sustainable jobs that are getting out of those industries. So the money is though we are assisting the BEE, but the reality is that most of companies that are owned by security are white owned. Very few black companies that own security industry. And it is then difficult to answer the questions. You can't say, if we are asking how does the training of security services respond to the question of decent and sustainable jobs? It can't. How does it respond to the question of which is our national agenda of transformation? We can't. We can go on and on. But I'm happy to hear what the board member is saying. At least we are on the same footing. And I'm sure the Department of Education will do something, not only to the CETA, but to many other CETAs, to make sure that we are getting what you want to get out of those sectors, because these are very sensitive sectors, by the way. You can't know all those people. If somebody comes because the requirements are there in the paper, it's easy to put requirements in the paper. You can't be sure, as you have stated here, I raised that question last time, that the people are trained by these companies
are the same people tomorrow who are sent to other countries. Because when they're trained, they're trained. They can do, after that, there's no job. They're not placed in jobs. And they, you can't be 100% sure that all these people that have been trained by these industries are here in South Africa. Because some people are sent to, there are labor brokers who are sending people all over the world. You don't know who, where all of these people are trained in these industries are. Security one by one. Where is this person? You can't trace them. But at least when you come here, like all the teachers, Lord said, we have trained so much. Because at least looking at the papers are nice. You know, they meet the requirements. And that's it. So I'm very glad to hear this input. My fears, at least, I know that something will be done to check who is training, where are those people. And in fact, the question of the money, I think we have to change that system. That the funds that are coming to the system must answer the question of poverty, of decent jobs, of, you know, etc. So, thank you very much.
Drop out, and so you will deal with that.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Yes, maybe here I must also mention the fact that more dropouts are within the private security industry. It's really a very difficult subsector that we must actually accept. But the initiatives that are being taken, I think we have stepped up our monitoring and evaluation from our learnership department. And the second aspect that is quite crucial that might also help is the reviewing of our contracts with these different employers, where we have indicated that the payments would definitely be based on the number of learners that remain within the program at the end of the day. It's unlike in the past where actually the contract would have stipulated a specific number, and you find that what we can regard as success factor maybe something like 70%. So we're really stepping up all these particular aspects to make sure that there are initiatives within the employer themselves to make sure that they keep those learners in the programs until they actually exit the system. Thank you.
Yeah, the other question I think that we could not yet
Honorable Chair, were you saying something?
It's worrying because in the defense, if the training was really working, generals could have changed to have blacks, because the reality is that skill development is also have to do with upward mobility. But in defense, what they were witnessing, they're all just all generals of apartheid. So we need to review what you are doing. Maybe we must check whether you are not just wasting money. We need to channel it somewhere to help those people. Thank you.
Although it comes as a comment from an honorable member, irreality is that it's unfortunate that, yes, we do have such situation in our midst. And I think some of these challenges within the department are challenges that perhaps some of the negotiations takes first prior as taking over the administration of the Department of Defense. It's not an excuse, Chair, but perhaps within these programs that we have developed, in terms of capacitation of our colleagues that have integrated via the programs that we have identified within the CETA, there has been that significant change, Chair. If you look at your Brigadier Generals, your Major Generals, Chair, I think that comment might be deemed to be unfair currently. There has been such changes, Chair. On the issue of dropout, Chair, just to add on Mr. Ngosheng, what we have done also as an authority, not to leave it only to our administrators, each project, Chair, that we identify has what we call a project champion. That project champion, Chairperson, is responsible for the monitoring of the program. You know of instances whereby a training is said is taking place in DR by a private security company, And when you get to that particular place, it's actually just an area whereby they are just only a clear area, Chairperson. There is no training that is taking place. So what we have moved to do in these instances is to say each project does have a project champion to look after. Ordinarily, the project champion, Chairperson, are members of the chamber that are coming, as I'm saying again, either from organized labor or the employer organization, as a, some form of a response. But we've taken it further, Chen, just because I needed to respond quickly due to time constraints, that the issue of dropout, it also touches more on one of the questions that was asked, Chair, here, to, that was put into us to say, our provincial presence, how far have we got at our provincial presence? Because if you do have these offices, to a certain extent, you are able to tap in to the issue of dropout in terms of your monitoring and evaluation. I think so far in our task team, we have identified and we have visited so far Eastern Cape. We are going to go to Limpopo and Northern Cape as possible areas whereby we would want to set up and open offices, Chairperson, that will be able to implement some of the programs that we had. It's based and it's influenced more on where our stakeholders are. We are dealing with national departments, as I said, most of the time. But also, we wanted to look at the areas that are deemed to be poor, Chairperson, and identifying Eastern Cape, Limpopo, and Northern Cape, and trying to bring these services. We are hopeful that our intention of furthering the skills development, we might be in a position, Chair, to fulfill it.
Yeah, thank you very much for the comment. I understand that I will agree with you that your generals, the hierarchy, you will see that the number of black people. I'm not sure if it is different from what is happening in the companies where you see that you have your CEOs that are black, but when it comes to the, you know, who's driving the company, it's so let's leave it there. Another question.
Chairperson, thank you. Responding on the issue of the assistance, that was not clear in terms of the CEO's presentation, in terms of what assistance are we offering to the learners. What we would normally offer is that we would identify the skills and the critical skills within the our subsectors as such. And most of our skills and critical skills within the industry are more on psychologists and on pharmacists. What we would normally do is we would offer bursaries to most of the kids that are underprivileged. We've targeted most of the universities that will be, especially in the Eastern Cape and the Limpopo province, wherein we know that those learners normally would not have an opportunity to either get bursaries from other organizations. So we would go there, interview those learners, and offer them a bursary for like 4 years most of the time. And the reason why maybe the targets were slow is that we've tried to look at maybe the third and the fourth year students, and we felt that we were not successful for the previous years. So now we've started by looking at students at entry level. Hence, now the bursaries that we're offering, they are costly, so we could not even reach our numbers. We had to drop the numbers because of the payments in terms of the academic bursaries, because we had to offer not only for tuition, but also for residence as well. So that means we'd have a bursary of about 50,000 per year per learner. So that dropped our numbers as well. And then what we do, most of the learners that will be completing, most of them, then we will take them through to the employer for workplace experience. And you would find that now we'd also be using the government departments and the government hospitals for them to get the training, so that after that, they will pay for their stipend as well, plus their accommodation, while we'll be taking them. Most of the time, we'll find that our psychology students, they will be maybe working with the military one hospital most of the time. So we'd have to pay for their stay, their accommodation, and pay the stipend as well for 1 year. So that's the only way. And the only thing that they have to do is to repay us by service for those departments. And that also we've done also for the intelligence community as well, to offer them some of the students, you know, assistance with forensic as well. Thank you.
Any more questions that are not answered?
I have attempted to exhaust all the questions, but I think the comment that I wanted to make is that I think we have realized that there were more questions around the private security industry. But I think the comments that were made by Mr. Peter were quite comforting in terms of saying this is the approach of board in this issue. But here, let me say as well that I think the challenges facing the private security sector are beyond skills development. Because if you look at the history of the sector, it has been a sector with a very poor industrial relations system for decades. It has been a sector of exploitation, racism. It's been a sector that was used also to destabilize other countries. I mean, those are the realities that we face. And I think as we think to ourselves, we have got to deal with this issue. There are other interventions other than skills and development. Like in this case, I think also the Department of Labor has got a role to play in terms of enforcing compliance, the basic conditions of employment, employment equity, making sure that those companies do comply to labor legislation. Recently, there was a study that was done by the Government Security Sector Council, basically looking at the role of private security in South Africa. And that study made key recommendations because government is the largest consumer of private security services. And we have got to make sure that those particular issues of transformation, compliance, even the role of trade unions in this sector. You know, you recall, I think it was last year where we had a very terrible strike, a number of people dying as a result. So I think there's still more that needs to be done. You know, we can do our small input as a city in terms of skills and development, but I think it's a broader national problem that we are facing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Badoy. Honorable sir,
uncomfortable after the last comment from the CEO. I should think what the honorable here was saying was that they don't have a problem to have the sitters, but the sitters, we need to separate the sectors. If the private sector is a private sector, let it go and have their own chamber as a private sector. The public sector must have their own chamber as a public sector, which is a reality. Because now you had not tell us. We can confirm to you that these people outside here are part of those strikes. The reality is that we cannot address in those chambers the Labor Relations Act, the Basic Condition of Employment Act. You can't address it as long as you give the money to the owners of those private companies. Because they are not draining them, believe me or not. Ask those people, they come there with the certificate. If you don't have a certificate, you won't be employed in that private security. So what we are saying is that we know what has happened in Satao. The reality is that what we are saying is not a true reflection of what was happening there. So I should think it is important that we separate the chambers like I think the board is proposing. Because the relationship between the public sector and the private sector is too different, too distinct. And that will help us. I think that's only what the board member is saying. It's not saying let's not develop, let's not conscientize Basic Condition of Employment Act or LRA. What I just don't understand is that how it's going to help. Because if they were trained fully by the very same private companies, they could have been aware now of their rights. But for this period that they are the majority in your city, nothing has happened to today. Those people are still paid 250 and nothing happens. Their treatment is still horrible. They don't have guns. They must send them with a cloak period. They shoot dead. And how does help them? I should think we need to ensure that the private sector look at that critically and the public sector look at it. Because public sector is more covered by the legislations and the way they are trained in the very same institutions. Not necessarily by the way how the CETA trained them, but the defense, the policing, the training give them all the powers. But those people, they don't have powers. And you give them, how can you say my boss could train me? At the end, say, I won't employ you if you talk too much. I'm training you. You don't know whether they've got certificates. But what I know that they go there with their own certificate, you can call the transport unions in all sectors to prove to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nyekemba.
Thank you very much. I think it's important to appreciate what is good, especially the element of monitoring whether the workplace skills plans that have been submitted to you and the training reports that follows those workplace skills plans, whether they're in line and really training did take place. I think we need to appreciate that because there's no provision in the Skills Development Act that says you need to have a monitoring team. Yours is just to administer the workplace skills plan and accept the reports and then say, hallelujah, everything is good. I think the other issue, Chair, is I think all sitters know because the Minister of High